Nowadays, encounter groups are very much in fashion. Through these encounter group sessions, people try to experience what happened in today's gospel story. Long before the coming of modern psychology or group dynamics, in our gospel lesson, a group of fishermen encountered a man called Jesus, and they were never again the same. Because in that meeting with Jesus, they were somehow confronted with the truth about themselves. And they knew at that moment that in order to become true to their most real selves, they had to follow him. And so they left everything and followed him, we are told. Now it also happens that each time that we come here to celebrate the Eucharist, the liturgy on the Lord's Day, we also have an encounter with the risen Jesus. And in doing so, we should be having an encounter also with the person that God designed each one of us to be. And yet, as much as we would like to view our celebration of the Eucharist as an encounter with Jesus, it really is not that for all of us yet. There's so many reasons why people come to church on Sunday. Some come out of obedience to a religious tradition, keeping faith with the religious practice handed down to them by their mothers and their mothers' mothers, and sometimes fathers. Some are here because of guilt or fear, unfortunately. Some people come out of the so-called excitement given to them by religion, at least exposure to new ideas and dreams and gestures and music and color, an attempt perhaps to break the monotony of everyday life, a sort of emotional release. Some people come because they enjoy the fellowship of the people that they like, or at least people they approve of, more than the common run of humanity. Some people do come because they are simply worn out and they do need the kind of spiritual refreshment, reinforcement that is needed to keep going during the coming week. These are just some of the reasons why people come to the Eucharist on Sunday. They're not all bad reasons at all. In fact, some of them are rather honorable. Yet, they are not distinctly Christian reasons. That is, they are not really necessarily connected with Jesus the Christ. Buddhists and Hindus and Muslims and others might practice their religions for all the same reasons that we just mentioned. It just happens almost accidentally that for us American people, the prevailing religious tradition happens to be Christianity. And if our coming here to the liturgy is to be more than just a kind of historical accident, we must come to encounter Jesus the Christ. And we can only begin to understand our liturgy when we know that we have gathered here not for religion in general, but rather for our personal commitment to Jesus the Christ in particular. When you were baptized, the decision was not whether you wished to be a religious person, but whether you wished to be a follower of Jesus the Christ. And the bread and wine that we receive here this morning are not simply religious symbols, but they really are the body and the blood, the life and the love of the risen Christ. given to each of us. Now we know that religion in general may be inspiring, uplifting, but true spiritual liberation is discovered only in communion with the victorious Christ who destroyed our death and was raised up for us. Over the years, it has been observed that America has become a mass society. In America, distinctiveness is discouraged. The trend today is toward a kind of generalized mediocrity. The so-called Middle America. And the chief imperative of this kind of society is not to make decisions or commitments, but simply to go along with the crowd. In a mass society, where each one of us is looked upon simply as a consumer unit, we are asked to make decisions only about trivial things. Will you venture into Marlborough country? Will you commit yourself to good taste in spite of bad grammar? These are among the urgent issues of the day, about which you are asked to exercise your divine endowment of free will. And today, American religion too has succumbed to that kind of mass culture. In fact, one of our country's most popular political leaders was noted for his spiritual exhortations to the people, in which he asked the American people to worship the God of your choice. He implied that it does not really matter at all what you believe, just so long that you do believe in something. This today remains the creed of the American religion in general. Such religion must necessarily resist any kind of encounter with Jesus the Christ, because he is too particular, too insistent, too purposeful. The liturgy of the Word of God will always challenge the mass mind to abandon the horde, to leave the crowd, and to become specific about the real issues of life and of death. Thousands of years ago, the ancient Greek people thought that human beings were fulfilled as humans only when they became engaged in politics, when they committed themselves to the really great questions of public importance for all the people. And the ancient Greek people also had a word they used for those people whose lives were preoccupied with trivia, with private matters only. And the Greek word for such a person has come in used in our own English language, and that word is idiot. Now, Jesus does not want us to be idiots. He does not want us to be a people who are preoccupied with trivia. Peter, James, and John, we should remember, were all members of Middle Palestine. They were average men. And yet when they encountered Jesus, their world was turned right side up. Their lives from that moment on were never the same. They had new values and new priorities. They were no longer idiots, no longer preoccupied with just private affairs and trivia. They had discovered the meaning of life in the service of Jesus. That's why it happens to be a dangerous thing to encounter Jesus. That's why people resist so very much. Because the biblical language for the possible consequences is frightening. In this springtime of the year, as we prepare for Lent, the words are conversion, a possible renewal of our baptismal commitment, being born again, becoming a new person. To the smug and the satisfied, the prospect of taking the invitation of Jesus to follow him can be really threatening. And yet, for those people who honestly in their heart do have some kind of thirst and hunger for righteousness and for justice, for those who know that life really should mean a great deal more than their present experience of it, for such people, accepting the invitation of Jesus to follow him becomes what can only be called a liberating experience. They left everything and followed him. What is it that we are invited to leave today? We are invited to abandon our prejudices, our illusions of grandeur, our private sins to which we cling. What aspects of our lives do we keep beyond the scope of examination? The truth is, these are the very chains that enslave us to our idiocy. The fact is, we have nothing to lose except our chains that hold us down. If we could in spirit encounter the risen Christ, then we must learn to come to the Eucharist here with a kind of total openness of heart, a vulnerability to be prepared to listen to the Word of God, the two-edged sword that not only heals but also cuts. To understand that we are invited to leave our preconceived perceptions and prejudices. Jesus says that he comes to us to offer life, new life. Life with abundance. But then he says that if you want this kind of life, you must also be prepared to lose the self-centeredness of your old life. It goes together. We die to the old self to allow the new life of the risen Lord to pour into us. And now this morning, as we are on the very verge of the springtime of the Spirit, our Lent, remind yourself that when we come here to celebrate the Eucharist, the Spirit of the risen Lord is always here in our midst to welcome us, to strengthen us, to invite us to come and follow him with open hearts, vulnerable. But he says, do not be afraid. Come follow me. Do not be afraid. Come follow me. That is the meaning of Lent, the springtime of our spirit.